It is 4:32 here on Downtown. Your Wednesday afternoon, Rich Kimble and Bruce Pratt with you. Time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101, and pleased to be joined by an author whose book we've talked about a couple of times on the show, one we enjoyed so much. The book is entitled Olympic Collision. Kyle Kitterling joins us this afternoon. Kyle, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
And Kyle, you were telling us before we came on that you got a connection to Maine. You used to have a place over at Sunday River, huh?
I did indeed. It's a gorgeous place. I was there in the very early days of that development and enjoyed it very much.
Well, as an old Sugarloafer, I'll forgive you that you're a Sunday River guy, but this is Bruce, but it sure is good. Sure is good to have you on board. As Rich said, we loved this book. I'm a writer myself, and it wasn't just the meticulous research and all that you did, but it was the way you managed to tell two very complex stories as if they were really one story. Was that something you set out to do?
Absolutely not. Like most people that viewed the incident in Los Angeles in the 1984 games, I thought when I started that I knew almost everything there was to know about both these women and what happened in the 3,000-meter race in the L.A. games, and I found very rapidly that I didn't really know anything, both about the women themselves and the incident, that so many, it was viewed by 2 billion people around the world. So I had the same image and the same impressions that most people had that they got through the prism of television coverage of the event itself and the aftermath. But I quickly learned that these were two very, very fascinating women, women that led eerily similar lives, despite the fact that they were born 8 years and 8,000 miles apart. Their lives followed very similar paths. Both came from dysfunctional families. Both used early emotional trauma as motivation. They were both estranged from their fathers. They were teenage phenoms in their respective countries. It was a very eye-opening experience, and their stories, while different, and were inspiring.
Yeah, I was a track coach for a long time, and like you, I thought I knew what happened. I thought I knew a lot about this. I found, especially Bud's story, I remember the controversy about her being from South Africa, being allowed to compete for Great Britain, but I didn't know all the details of how much grief she had to endure. Is Zola Budd, in your mind, one of the toughest athletes you've ever read about or known about?
Without any question. There has never been, in my opinion, there's never been an athlete at any age, at any time, anywhere, that was more mistreated, misjudged, exploited, savaged by the media than Zola Budd was when she was a 17-year-old child, taken literally out of her home in rural South Africa, transported overnight in secrecy to Great Britain, and greeted by this, I don't know how else to describe it. I described it in the book as bedlam, but it's more like hell on earth. And she endured this treatment by the anti-apartheid lobby, by politicians in Great Britain for, from March of 1984 until she left for the Olympics in August of 1984. And how she did that, I don't know. I asked her. I said, this is unbelievable. And she said, well, I had the ability to dissociate. And I thought, well, that's all athletes have that. But no, not many athletes have had to endure what she had to endure.
Clearly, she appreciated the chance you offered her to help set the record straight about some things.
Well, I think so. And we have in our collective mind this image, this picture, and it was fleshed out by Mary Decker's allegations and prevarications about who caused the incident and the race itself. And although Mary knew it not it was not true. She blamed Zola in the immediate aftermath of the race, and we heard that, we saw that, and that's the image we have in our mind of Zola Budd. And if you ask some, if you mention the name to anyone old enough to remember that Olympic Games, if you mention Zola Budd's name, you'll get the answer. Oh yeah, the girl that tripped Mary Decker, and that's something that Zola had to live with for more than a decade before Mary finally admitted that it was not, in fact, Zola Budd's fault.
And Mary endured probably more surgeries and more physical ailments. They said that she was glass from the knees down. Of about any, I mean, she had a kind of courage, regardless of her personality and maybe some other thing. But she had a kind of courage and a kind of DNA that you rarely see in middle distance runners.
Mary had more comebacks than Cher. She had 30 surgeries during her career, and make no mistake about it, Mary Decker, despite her personality, which could be prickly at times, she was the greatest middle distance runner this country has ever produced. She held every single record from 800 meters to 10,000 meters, and no one has ever even come close to doing that. She was just the greatest runner we've ever had, and she was controversial. She was either hurt or awesome. She was either setting world records or she was limping around or on crutches. Mary was a very obsessive, compulsive character. She never allowed herself to heal properly after injuries. And from the time she was 11 years old, Mary Decker always had to be first. She had to be first, whether it was a training run or whether it was a world championship race. And when she found herself in second place in the Olympic Games in 1984, where she was supposed to be finally crowned with a gold medal, the coronation of Queen Mary, she found herself in a very awkward and unfamiliar place, and the results were disastrous.
We're talking with Kyle Kitterling, the author of Olympic Collision. Kyle, what was the biggest surprise that you found in your research for the book?
Well, I think the thing that I found most fascinating was the similarities between the two as opposed to the differences between the two. And one of them was a contributing factor to what happened in that race. Both of these women employed the same running style, which most track coaches will tell you was suicide. Both of them insisted on running from the front. And being a pace setter in a middle distance race is often thought to be a suicidal strategy to employ. But they both did it, and they both did it successfully. And of course, it ultimately led to the incident that caused Mary to fall to the track. But I think that the thing that I found about these two women was that their resiliency was so overwhelming. They can endure so much and still come back and achieve great things.
Do you think that part of the legacy of both of these women is tarnished by the fact in this country that we look at the Olympics every 4 years as the end-all and be-all? We don't really recognize World Cup skiing champions. We wait 4 years to decide who's the best. That the Olympic medal, the fact that Mary Decker did not get the Olympic medal, has it's overshadowed her career in a way that people don't understand that she was by far, as you point out, the greatest middle distance runner. I'm not sure, not just in this country, but maybe ever, that the Olympics have become something that can really tarnish somebody for the wrong reason.
Well, it wasn't just you and I that think that way. Mary Decker herself thought that way. She thought that was the one achievement that she always wanted. She had wanted it since she was 14 years old, actually, and was not eligible for the 1972 Olympics, despite the fact that she was the best miler that the United States had at the time. We place a great emphasis on Olympic achievement, and I think that you're probably correct that we overemphasize the Olympic medal, but nevertheless, for most Americans, at least, it's the only time we ever watch track, and we only see it during the Olympic Games. So the emphasis is certainly there. I think in the case of these two women, the their legacy is is tarnished by that incident in the Los Angeles Games. You know, for any athlete, their greatest fear is that they're going to be remembered for their most embarrassing moment. And for better or for worse, probably. These two women, who were spectacular athletes, world champions two times, both of them, set many world records. They're going to be remembered forever in our collective minds as for their most embarrassing moment, and I think that that's unfortunate and it's unfair, and it remains very, very sad.
Until I read the book, I was not aware of where Zola Budd has settled and where she is in her life right now. Did that surprise you to see where things have led her?
No, Zola, unlike Mary. Mary has said that she thinks about that incident in Los Angeles every single day and has done so for 32 years. Zola Budd, on the other hand, has moved on. She's past it. She's at peace with herself. She's at peace with what happened. It's like it happened to somebody else. She's a track coach at Coastal Carolina University in South Carolina. She still runs. She still wins. She runs ultra marathons, marathons, and half marathons. She's quite a remarkable woman. And the two of them, incidentally, were reunited for the first time in 32 years by the filmmakers of a movie called The Fall, which was going to be on, I think it's Discovery Channel in April in the United States. It's already been telecast in the United Kingdom, and it was kind of an awkward reconciliation, but I think that it probably brought a sense of closure to both of these women.
As I look at this, and I look at these two women, and I see how at one time, Budd was so identified with South Africa. It's the only place she wanted to be. That was home. That for her to sort of discover her new home on the east coast of the U.S., it seems to me to be like the final step in a great journey. I mean, she's from the same town as Tolkien, so I suppose great tales could be told. But is that journey to her peace, did she need to leave South Africa, do you think, to find that?
Well, I don't know. I think she did it mostly because of her children, the educational opportunities here for her children. She has three children. Zola she still travels back to South Africa. She's an icon. She's the athlete of the century in South Africa. They call the little mini buses that transport the predominantly black population around the townships of South Africa. They call them Zola Buds. I mean, she's as huge a personality as you can find in South Africa, and But she makes her home here, stays here most of 9 months out of the year, something like that. And she's at peace. She is at peace with who she is and where she is. And I thought it was kind of funny when I first drove up to her house in South Carolina to visit with her. The bumper sticker on her car read, "Running is cheaper than therapy." So I think she's probably found the place, and she runs every single day, and she's still running for the same reason she started running. She's running to honor the memory of her late sister.
Yeah, that was a very compelling part of the story. If you had one piece of advice for Mary Decker, what would it be?
Get over it and enjoy what you have achieved.
Yeah, well, I guess that's as well as anything.
Well, there you go. Kyle, it is an absolutely fascinating story and tremendous research and wonderful to read. Thank you so much for writing the book and for talking with us about Olympic Collision.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.